Gee, big day, not so much for us. None of us have 457 visas, so we are cool to stay.
No, but we did speak to people whose industries are affected by 457 visas, and then we had Ross Green with Channel 9's Money Man on to talk about them as well.
And they're dividing their Channel 9 talent because Tom Steinfort is in Seoul, and he was saying whether he was personally concerned about being there with all the talk of nuclear weapons.
And Wednesday's my favourite segment. Big names in your workplace. What about John Bon Jovi buying a pair of dick stickers?
How do you like that? That was pretty fantastic. And a bit of Paleo Pete. Enjoy the catch up.
Big names in your workplace. They're all over the place. The big names in your workplace.
Self-explanatory. Time to get it underway. Our favourite segment. Katrina from North McLean. Where were you working?
Ella Bashay at Broadbeach.
Ella Bashay. And who? And who wandered in?
Anthony Mundine.
Did he just? What did he buy?
Fake tan.
He had a pedicure with his girlfriend at the time.
Had a pedicure?
Not a manicure, a pedicure.
No, a pedicure.
I guess his fingers would have fingers would have already been stuffed, I guess. And was he nice?
Yeah, he was lovely. Totally not what you see on TV.
So you knew who he was straight away?
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely, yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Katrina. Anthony Mundine gets pedicures. We've already learned something today. This is fantastic.
Wasn't a lot in that, though, was there?
No, it was an unlikely scenario, which was what I liked about it. Okay. Here comes Rick from Chermside. Rick.
G'day, guys. How you going?
Yeah. What was the workplace?
Selling caravans.
Oh.
Selling caravans.
Yeah. Craig Lowndes walked in, and he's bought a couple now from us. But, just such a nice guy, and... easy to get along with, and
I've seen Lowndes's caravan. It's actually been behind my car once, one of my utes. It's a long story. Now, what was he looking for in the caravan?
It was a family van, just to take his kids away.
Chilly
and
beautiful.
Yeah, chilly and old. Just looking for something that was could handle dirt roads and go out to the country and take it down to Bathurst and all the places he likes to race.
Does he put a motorbike on the back of it? Because he loves his mountain bike.
He did have a what they call a toy hauler we made for him, and you could put motorbikes in the back and then drop bunks down for the kids and.
What was he like? Yeah, was he tough to deal with money-wise when it came to, I'll have to speak to the manager time?
Screw you down?
I didn't have much to do with the money side. That was more the owner of the company. I'm pretty sure with the endorsements and things that he was doing with the company,
hello.
He probably didn't pay much.
Okay.
Mad discount.
Hello.
Thank you, Rick. Well played.
Why does Lowndes need two caravans? I like these. Another one.
One's
a Breaking Bad.
Yeah, right.
Julie's from the Gold Coast. Julie, where was
Hi,
the...
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, very good. What was the workplace?
I worked in a swimwear store called Sunburn in Surfers Paradise.
I know that store,
This could be anyone. Yeah. Who was it, Julie?
Well, it was John Bon Jovi and his wife.
Oh wow. Goodness. Did he try on any toys?
Yeah. it was about 30 years ago and it was a Boxing Day. Yeah. And back then there wasn't a lot of swimwear stores like there is now. So we were full-on crowded and... my older boss said to me, that guy's weird, he won't let anyone serve his wife or the lady that he was with. And I looked around and it was John Bon Jovi.
Oh, now did he have the big hair going at that stage, Julie?
Yeah, he did. He looked amazing. I was speechless.
And did you check it out? Was it his wife or was it just a Christmas girlfriend?
No, Christmas girlfriend. It was his wife.
Oh. Dorothea. She's still hanging in there.
Jesus, you know John Bon Jovi's wife's name?
I know.
Good Lord.
I don't even know why I know that, but there you go, Tanya.
That's not bad.
This has been a wonderful group so far. I love the range, the variety. I'm really enjoying this. Who have we got next?
Tanya.
Hi.
Hi.
Sorry?
Who was it?
Anthony Milford.
Tanya. No. Tanya, what have I said about current Broncos apart from Corey Oates? What have I said?
That they're amazing.
No, they're dull. And their wives have all got blogs. Well, all right.
Hold on, just Tanya. We got one last chance before we send you off. What was he doing?
He just comes in. He plays the pokies and he eats.
Here we go.
Jesus.
That's a double yellow.
No!
You're off, Tanya.
This is... Where at, Tanya?
Pardon?
Where at?
The Bluefin Fishing Club in Awa.
Okay, she's gone.
No, that's a red card. You're out. Thanks, Tanya.
Now, listen, I love Tanya, and I'm very happy for her to call, but this is exactly what I'm talking about.
Thank you.
It was the Bluefin Fishing Club at Benalla.
It's a really nice place, but that is exactly what I... In the old days, remember the time... Robin, the reason I'm like this, do you remember the time that Kevvy Walters told us that him and Alfie Langer did commando rolls over the front of a car when they were going into a bar at a hotel in the city, Mato? Do you remember that
exactly.
day?
Exactly. Those were the days when Broncos were interesting.
Those were the days.
Now their tattoos are the most interesting thing about them.
But they do go in and eat and play the pokey.
Yeah, I know. They've got to eat.
A race. Bon Jovi trying on budgies is the winner today. Julie from the Gold Coast. You're going to see the Queensland Firebirds take on West Coast
Fever. She tried to get a peek, didn't she?
Yeah,
she
did. Absolutely. I'd definitely try and get a peek. It's a John Bon Jovi, for God's sake.
What about that wily old Malcolm Turnbull taking charge of the national political agenda? He sidetracked things a little bit. He made a big announcement. It was on FaceTime on Facebook.
I want you to be the first to know about a major announcement we're making today.
What about that? About 457 visas being limited. It's a huge announcement. Why would he have gone Facebook first?
It did seem very odd to me because you're right, Marto, as you said off air, who's Facebook friends with Malcolm Turnbull? Well, maybe because Tony Abbott isn't, it was a way of keeping it away from Tony.
Big news.
He's also a public profile Facebooker, so everyone can access his announcement. Right. So you don't actually have to be one of his friends to see it. He's just trying to potentially, I reckon he's cool and young and hip and he's talking to people.
Well, he's doing the right thing. He's putting Australians first for a change Well, I think he's doing the right thing. I know a lot of people are complaining, going, no, we need some of these people. We don't need all of them, though.
Okay, explain it to me just quickly. So basically, visas, 457 visas.
They were giving them out willy-nilly for years, forever. And they've signed, let's tighten this up and just make it for 2-year skilled visas, skilled profession visas, and 4-year skilled profession visas. They've limited to those two.
Many, 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 many different occupations that you could come to Australia on a semi-permanent, basically, because it was a pathway to permanent residency. That's the other thing.
There were 651 professions involved, Ed, and now they're getting rid of 215 of those occupations.
Yeah, but when you read some of them, Ed, like the caravan park manager, there are 7 of those that are being impacted.
Oh. Was there?
Yeah, potters. We've got 5 of those who came through on those visas coming to Australia to be a potter. Helicopter pilot, there's 11. Chemical engineer, 33. See, I would have thought we kind of needed chemical engineers. But anyway, interior decorators, 16.
Oh, we don't need any more of those.
Oh, no.
Oh, how about web developers? 237.
See, that's the murkiest. Mm. Well, that's one of the murkiest areas too.
What qualifies
and quantifies what a web developer is and isn't, and it's sort of a good way of throwing up a bit of a smokescreen if you're just hoping to come and live in Australia, which a lot of people want to do, and fair enough too.
One of the greatest places on earth to live. That's why they do want to come here and be a zookeeper. They're limiting them. Jockeys, golfers, auctioneers, blacksmiths, shearers, wood turners. We've got enough old blokes doing that. Antique dealers. These are all specific things that people were coming into Australia on.
I'd love to hear from people out there. If you've got a business that has used 457 visas.
Oh, I'll give you one that's red hot. Tiling. There's so many Korean blokes in Brisbane tiling. I don't know I guess they came in on 457s and they're undercutting
the
market.
Wouldn't you want to get out of career at the moment?
Get out of career. I'd want to get out of tiling because it's bloody hard on your body. But the thing is, I wonder if there's trades. Like, are there tradesmen's jobs getting taken? Whose jobs are getting taken? Has anyone missed out on work because of 457 opposition? Apparently they brought them in with the mining. They went, run out of workers because everyone's gone to the mines. Well, they're not there anymore.
So has your industry, your workplace, been affected by 457 visas? And if so, do you think it's been a positive thing or a negative thing? Are you happy that the government's getting rid of these? Or are they just trying to do something to be seen to be doing something? Jobs for Australians.
Smart.
It sounds good, but maybe it's just a bit of political posturing. We'll start with Lex from Gumpendale. Which industry are we talking about, Lex?
Transport industry and agriculture industry.
Are there 457s involved there?
Yeah, there is. A lot of diesel fitters and mechanics coming in on 457s, Marta. And the problem we've got is there's a skill shortage. So the young people of Australia don't want to be mechanics. They don't want to be truck drivers. They don't want to go and work on farms.
Oh.
So where do you get the people to do it? Like grain harvest, there's pommies out there, backpackers and 457 Indians out there driving headers and chaser bins because they just don't have the labour out there.
Is that who's driving all the headers and stuff, the up and down the paddocks, 457 workers?
Yeah, it's 457 workers out there working on farms because they just can't get guys to work. The big issue is that it's not the 457. There's just jobs that Australians don't want to do.
So how do you do it?
You know, what do we do? Just let the crops rot in the fields?
No. Is it a money thing or the work's too hard?
I think it's the remoteness, to be honest with you, Marta. They don't want to go out and experience what it's like to live in the bush. And they don't want to move out of the city. So what do you do? And then you've got issues with, in our industry, a skills shortage in kids don't want to leave school and be diesel mechanics. So how do we fix our trucks? How do we fix things if we don't? If we can't get that skill set through people, like you tell me what kid you know that says I want to leave school and be a truck driver.
Yeah,
no. It's an excellent point, Lex. I appreciate that.
Is diesel fitting on that list of jobs that have been removed? I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it, but that doesn't mean
we've been looking down the list. Hey, Ian from Forest Lake, does it affect your industry?
Yeah, well, we bring in 457 workers all the time. We're engineers, and we use them for projects. So our company is a multinational company, and so it's really based on the demand of the project. Okay. We don't have enough people in Australia to design the projects, but by the same token, we go overseas as well, and we work on projects over there, and there are equivalent visas for other countries that are similar to the 457 visa.
And so, Ian, sorry, mate. So you're saying that Australia needs to train more local engineers?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
And diesel fitters.
Okay, that's good. Okay. Yeah, and diesel fitters. All right, so
this is why
we're talking. We're learning already about the types of jobs that there aren't enough Australians to do. So Morag joins us. Now, Morag.
Hello.
Ooh,
oh,
Irish.
Now I'm hearing an accent straight away. So
I've got an Irish accent.
Oh, hey, that's okay. We're happy
so
to hear
So you can
it.
Probably guess that I've potentially come over here on a 457 visa.
Good
yes,
one.
Fair enough.
Maybe why I've went wrong up.
Okay, well, tell us about what was your situation? How long you been here? What did you do?
I've been in Australia for about 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm a physiotherapist, and I work in the health system. And I came here initially, I came for 6 months and then I fell in love with the place. And unfortunately for my mother, I fell in love with an Australian. So here I am. every mother's worst nightmare, I think.
Yes.
So I've actually gone through the process of getting a 457 visa. And it was for the last 24 hours, I've been, you know, you're on Facebook and things. And I've read some really racist comments and really terrible comments. And the amount of times that when I heard Marlo say this morning, it's about keeping Australian jobs for Australians, it just really upsets me because I came over here, I worked so hard, it cost me a lot of money to stay in this country because I love this country and because I love the people. And it's, you know, I'm not coming over and I didn't take a job from an Australian person. I took a job to get the 457 visa. Anyone who's got through the process will tell you it's not easy. It costs a lot of money. You have to prove, my brother, who's also Irish, did the same thing and he had to do an English speaking test. And I know people jokingly ask me all the time what my first language is, but it's English.
No, I understand. How much
did it cost?
Yeah, how much?
Well, it cost me about $12,000 to stay in the country.
Whoa.
That's not so much, Morag. I'm sorry, but that's actually not that much. If you think about I've had people who've gone through immigration processes in other countries to leave Australia to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's 40, 50. $12,000 to come and live in Australia, that's a bargain.
Well, it isn't. $12,000 is only what I paid. It actually costs a lot of money. I know other people who've come over here on different visas and it's cost a lot of money.
Okay.
And it might sound like a bargain, but I came out here. I didn't have $12,000 is a lot of money to someone who doesn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
So,
of course it is. Before you get back living in Australia, $12,000 is a bargain. It is.
Oh, no, I do completely agree, but it's not cheap. And if you're someone who's coming over here, and, you know, it's not like you can just walk into a job and, people say, oh, yeah, they're undercutting Australian people is what I've been reading a lot.
That's true.
It's a complete lie. And if you are undercutting an Australian, you're paying a lot of money to undercut Australians.
So,
and
Greg,
I actually went through the four.
Does that visa give you Medicare? Does that visa give you the rights that Australians have when you live here?
It gives you Medicare, but you're not allowed to get the dole, so you can't get Social Security. So you have to work, which is completely fine. I have no issue with that, but it doesn't give you all the rights. So to get all the rights of, like, getting Social Security, being able to vote, all those things, you need to get your citizenship.
All right, Morag, hey, welcome aboard.
And Trent, what about your industry? What is it, mate?
Truck driver.
Righto. So how does it affect it?
It took me 2 years to get a job driving trucks in Brisbane here, and the response I was getting from people, not that there was a lack of work, it was they were telling me that there was cheaper people they could get. And there's big companies around Australia which use 457 visas just because they're cheaper.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's what I was hearing a little bit of yesterday, Trent. It's okay to say, oh, listen, there's not enough Australians to do the work, but what about when big companies realise they can pay 457s less? Well, of course they're going to do it, aren't they, Trent?
Yeah, that's right. They've got to maximise their profit. That's all they're thinking about.
So how come they're allowed to pay less for 457 workers? I would have thought if you're actually working within this country, all the same thing.
Yeah, Trent.
I'm not sure how it works, but that's all I was getting told was we can get other people cheaper.
Probably illegally.
Hey, thanks, Trent. Good on you, mate. Ben is from Bridgman Downs. Ben, what is the industry and how has 457 visas affected it?
Part of what we do in our company is catering services, and we employ a lot of chefs, but there's a national shortage of chefs at the moment. And
What were you talking about, the Indian chef said? Yeah, I heard it from someone who worked in the, government space, that there was a lot of people coming over from India and they were doing chef qualifications here so that they could stay in Australia. Is that true?
We have Filipinos and they send their money home to their families. And I doubt chefs will be affected in this. Well, I hope they're not, because Wimbledon is some really, really good staff.
I can't see it on the list.
No. Well, I hope it's okay because we've got really good guys working for us.
Interesting.
Families, you know.
So. Yeah, how long can they stay, Ben, on a 457?
Well, you have to renew them. I think it's every couple of years or a few years. I'm not exactly sure of the details. But
so you have to sponsor, you have to sign off as their sponsor, correct?
That's right. And we have to guarantee employment for the term of that visa.
Yeah, okay. All right. Hey, thanks, Ben. Appreciate that. A lot of calls coming through. We might take some more a little bit later on. Just having a look here. This is the one that shocked me, Robin. Dancers and other entertainers. There's 12 of them currently here in Australia on 457 visas. And, Marto, I know that you've been saying off air a lot that if you want exotic dancers to actually be exotic and not just Australian girls putting on accents, you're going to have to bring them in on these visas. And you make a fine point.
This could be an exemption. This could be a real deal breaker for Turnbull.
Marto, Ed and Robin's the new Triple M.
From personal experience, I know MKR is still going and going. It seems like it's been going 4 to 6 months. Joining us now, though, from MKR is Paleo Pete Evans. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
I'm terrible. What? I'm so weak. Easter eggs aren't paleo, so all I could have over the long weekend was activated almonds, diet turnip milk and Nerf balls to eat.
Sad news, Pete. The seafood king has broken up with his girlfriend from my kitchen rolls.
Oh, no. Really? The seafood king is single? Oh, he's a real catch. All right, that was a joke. Okay, that was a joke. Seafood, catch, really? No, stop you guys.
No, that's gold.
I haul my teeth out of bed to speak to you. and this is what I get. You're as bad as Manu. Speaking of teeth, have you seen the Seafood King's teeth? That huge gap in the middle?
Oh, yeah.
That gap is so big you could drive a Manu through it. That was another joke.
You know, we got that one.
Listen, speaking about Manu, which you love doing, how is he, you big
awful,
mate?
Awful, just French, smelly, fat as the day is long. Yeah. His haircut is so bad and he's so fat that people now call him Kim Jong Manu. Oh, yeah, he's got a... I can tell you, he's launched a few missiles. Don't follow him into the bathroom. Yeah. Jeez.
Oh, Paleo Pete. Thanks for your time.
I'm so miserable. Yes. Can you send Pete some sourdough or a slice of Wonder White? That's what they call my teeth in the business, the Wonder White. Oh, put me out of my misery.
We will. This is the best night of my life. North Korea has said that it's ready for war if the USA has any more provocative acts. They had their huge military parade the other day. Yes, some of the missiles were wobbling in the breeze, but they shouldn't be taken lightly. What's the mood in South Korea? Because, you know, it's their closest neighbor, and I've been hearing from on the news that they're preparing for war. And Channel 9's Tom Steinford is on the ground in South Korea in the capital, Seoul. G'day, Tom. What's the mood like there?
Hey, guys. Yeah, look, it's a strange one because to a certain extent in the South, they have got this mindset of, here we go again. It's those knuckleheads up north after their usual tricks, making some threats. But the unknown quantity here for them and what's different this time around is that on the other side of the fist fight here is a man who no one knows just how his temperament's going to play out. Of course, Donald Trump, president of the US. People are a little bit nervous about because they've seen him bomb Syria, they've seen him bomb Afghanistan, and if he bombs North Korea, make no mistake about it, it's on.
Well, where do they go? All my wife wants to know is, if something happens to North Korea, where do they fire their first bombs?
I reckon it'll be South Korea. I mean, it's just the easiest target for them. Yeah. We're in Seoul, and that's only about, 40K south of the border. You've got 25 million people here. It's more than the entire population of Australia jammed into one city. If they want to do some damage, this is where they'll hit.
But having been to Seoul a couple of times, because I've flown Korean Air, and you have like a 24-hour stop over there, they're very organised. They know, you know, there are signs up and stuff about what to do. And
what, all the time?
Yeah, there is all the time. Like, I remember seeing, Tom, they had vending machines with gas masks in it. They're prepared, aren't they?
Yeah, every subway station has a sign on the side of it saying shelter, and they know that if they do come under missile attack, that, they head underground into the subway system, and down there they've got those gas mask storage facilities. They are ready, but, you know... As we were talking to one of the locals here the other day, he said, yeah, we know what to do. We've got our preparations if the bomb, you know, if we start getting bombed. But he said, if a nuclear bomb hits, well, you know, it doesn't matter what subway station you go into, you're screwed.
Are you nervous, Tom?
Look, I've checked the flight schedule out of here in case I need to make a rapid exit at any stage. Look, the thing for me is I think it's a really big case of mutual deterrence here. The US doesn't like North Korea, but... and North Korea doesn't like America. North Korea knows that if America does declare war on them, they will be annihilated. They'll be wiped off the map. Yeah. The regime will be gone. And it'll be done in a matter of days. But how many nukes could they fire in a couple of days?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they only need to send one out. So America knows that, yes, they beat North Korea, but there's the real possibility that there could be a nuclear bomb dropped somewhere and that'll be blood on their hands if it does happen. So they're both sort of... It's a staring contest, and we're waiting to see who blinks first.
Hey, Tom, let's say that does happen and they get obliterated, the regime. I'm sure they'd only target Kim Jong-un and his military. Would South Korea then be reunited? Like, would the North Koreans go, oh, my God, like in a Germany's-type situation?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, it's a really weird dynamic between the two countries. The South Koreans almost feel a bit of sympathy towards the people up north. But the north, look, I've spent time in the north. I've visited there before to film. And look, it's a bizarre mindset because they all talk about how they're their own strong country. But it's so much bluff and bluster. And you get the sense that it's half of it is sort of them acting out of fear, knowing that Kim Jong-un's henchmen would knock them off if they step out of line. And then also, it's brainwashing as well. Like, there is this genuine sense of adoration amongst so many of them there too. That Kim Jong-un is, you know, he's a god. And so for a lot of them, it would still be a strange concept for them to reunite with the South.
They can't reach here with any bombs, can they?
Well, see, they reckon they can. It's this new range of intercontinental ballistic missiles that they've got that they say can hit the west coast of the USA and heading into a little bit into America. Now, you draw that line to the south instead of to the east, it hits Australia. And then, when I was in North Korea, the military officials there made the point to me. They said, we have nukes and we can reach Australia, and you're an ally of America, so you are on the hit list.
Jesus. Oh. And remember those two golfers from Brizzy went over there and pretended that was the Australian golf team.
That was a hoax. Tommy Steinford from Channel 9, mate, in Seoul in South Korea. We'll keep it on Channel 9 to see the latest. Appreciate your time.
On you guys. Cheers.
I might as well talk to everyone about this, but you know you love your mother-in-law. I rarely talk about mine, but at the moment I'd like to talk about her this morning. She's the mother of seven children.
Wow.
Between the age of 48, this is my wife Kathy's mother, between 48 and 62, I suppose her kids are, 23 grandchildren.
Wow.
And you guys know, and you've been very kind about it, that she's not well. She's in palliative care at the Wesley Hospital.
They're very good carers.
Amazing how many times we've been to the Wesley Hospital. That's where I've been when I've been crook a few times. Had knee operations. Both our children were born there. Cass lost her father there. The mother is in palliative care about 40 metres away from where her father died, her husband, 2 years ago. So it's been a funny old week. We were all summoned there last Wednesday. Every child came from all around Australia, wherever they were. All the grandchildren arrived from interstate, from Brisbane, from out west, from everywhere everyone lives. Amazing room, like the hospital just went, what the hell is going on inside that room of Cecily? Oh, so everyone was in there, the seven girls, two of them were knitting, one was showing photos on the internet. It's amazing. Like, Cass' mum's dying, and she was really close to death. Last Thursday, they brought the priest and said the last rites.
Mm-hmm.
And we, of course, were going to Sydney to see our daughter, Hillary. She'd flown up. Oh, God. So we've booked to go down. She's come up to see her nanny who's dying, and it's a very tight family.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so the last rites have been said, and then we walk out there, and Kath was in tears all Thursday night going, I can't leave Mum. I can't leave my Mum's going to die. I can't leave Mum. It went on and on. And I went, oh, all right, well, we do what we got to do. I said, listen, let's give it one last go. Let's go there on Thursday, on Friday morning. This is Good Friday. We're flying to Sydney at 8 o'clock. Went to the hospital at 5:30 a.m. Okay, so we've left there the Thursday night, can't speak, barely conscious, can't just open one eye. You know, the end was near.
Mm-hmm.
We get there Friday morning and the nurse says, like, you're there at 5:30 to visit someone in the hospital, not a regular time. Easy to get a park though, I'll tell everybody. They let you in and to say the last farewells and it's all, we get in there, just as we're about to go in the door, the nurse, and we thought, oh, she's going to say, it's not good looking, it's looking grim. The nurse said, it's been amazing. She woke up 2 hours ago and can't stop her talking. We went, what? And we walk in there, she's asleep. Wake her up. It was a miracle. Something had happened. Like she's fairly religious. Like she loves her Anglican church and everything. One of the world's most beautiful women. So, and she recognised everyone, sat up, had a chat, touched her hand. She had strength back. She reckons something's happened. She thinks she's cured of the cancer that's been killing her for a while now.
Does she know what?
No, they don't know because they're not going to do any more tests on her. They can't put her in a bloody MRI machine anymore and check it out. She says, I think I'm cured.
Oh, bless.
I know. She's still in there, of course, but she survived over the weekend. She's eating again. And like she was grey and she could, you know, the death, what I call the cancer.
Yeah, you can tell.
We just thought it was the end and we were worried we'll go to Sydney. We'll have to fly back, you know, 2 hours after getting there. I survived the weekend, flourishing. I'm going to the hospital straight after this to play Scrabble with her. Just
what?
To keep her mind. Well, I figured it'll keep her mind sharp. She loves to Scrabble, you know, and for a change, I'll have to let her win.
It does happen.
But I reckon
though,
I've seen a miracle. A relative.
It does happen.
Does it happen?
It does happen. Of course it does.
She's not going to live forever, but she's going to live for a bit longer after having the last rites read to her. And, you know, all right, goodbye. Everyone had said their goodbyes and everyone felt happy. And then she's kicking on.
There's got to be some other, you know, sort of miracle comebacks that people have.
I like the word
families.
Miracle. Things that have turned around. Situations where you think it's, you know, you can see the end. And then miraculously,
the end was right there. And she's hanging on. I don't know. If you had one of these, like a relative, whether it's a miracle or not, just hanging on.
The great thing is we have a completely full board. Brian of Kashmir, have you experienced a miracle?
Yes, Marta. Sorry to hear about your mother-in-law, mate. But
thanks, Brian.
Something happened to us. I got a very small family. My uncle got a brain tumour. And there was no chance he was going to survive it, etc. So we thought he had an operation and was very close to death. I flew back to the UK from Oz, had some time with him, and he lived for another nearly 2 years, mate. And towards the end, the best thing of all was eventually I flew back. He's a mad keen fisherman, awesome fisherman.
Hey.
Took him back and managed to get him out on his last few days fly fishing. and then that was the end.
Did you get a trout?
Mate, he got a couple at first. I didn't, but he did. God. And, yeah, that'll be a lasting memory. So
the will to live is an amazing thing.
Absolutely, mate. And time's precious. So.
Yes. That's nice. Thank you, Brian. Okay, it's Sue from Greenbank. Sue, have you had a remarkable comeback?
Yes, no, I didn't. I'm actually a nurse. And, yeah, so we see a lot of people on their deathbed, unfortunately. So first of all, sorry, Marta, about your mother-in-law.
Oh, that's okay. We're all fine. I'll be playing Scrabble with her in an hour or so. And
yeah.
Not whipping her ass for a change, but thank you.
Okay. Hopefully she wins. And, yeah, so we see a lot of people on their deathbed, unfortunately, and it is actually quite common, without sounding nastily, but a lot of people do actually perk up towards the end. They'll be quite unwell and then they'll have a bit of a perk up and then they usually pass away.
So how long does that last?
It depends on the person. A lot of them have a bit of fight. I had a patient once who was quite elderly, but she was very petite and weighed about 34 kilos. She lasted about 3 weeks.
Jeez.
And others.
Okay. What's the secret?
Weeks.
What's the secret? Sorry. Is it family being around or waiting for people to get there?
It just depends on the person, I guess, when they're ready to go. Like, some will wait until all the family's been and say goodbyes, and then they'll pass away. Others will wait for the family to get there, and then they'll pass while the family's there. I guess it's just on the person and depends on their condition and the situation at the time. But, yeah, because I had the same thing happen to my dad as well. So, yeah.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate that. Rob from Mitchelton. Rob, what happened with your family?
So I had an uncle, and he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And they told him, go home, spend the last Christmas with your family. Like, you're not going to survive much more than this. 9.5 years later, and he's still kicking.
Oh, Jesus. Come on, mate. You've had enough.
So what happened? Did the cancer diminished or?
He just reacted well to the treatment. So he had chemo and all that sort of stuff.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
Does anyone say that in your family? It's a miracle, old uncle, whatever his name is?
Yeah, Paul. Paul's his name. And no, yeah, we're all really surprised.
God,
gosh.
Keep going.
Yeah, he's done well there. Good on you, Rob. finally, we go to Trish from Margate. Trish, we're talking about family members that have had a comeback, a miracle of like they were given the last rites. They were not given long to go and they've bounced back well. Trish, what happened in your family?
When my father was 52, he had a massive heart attack and was given 5 years to live. He developed chronic heart failure, emphysema. He's just turned 81.
Ooh.
He is just survived 29 years.
God.
He's like a bloody cockroach. We just can't kill him. But he's just amazing. Every time, Mum and I think out of the last 28 years have spent 14 years of that at the hospital.
Hey.
He's had heart blockages and his heart just seems to keep going. The doctors, every time we turn up, they say, "You're still alive, Bernie." It's like, seriously, no one actually knows why he's still going, but he's still going. And then it's like, it's true that, you know, you think, well, my brother's coming over for a visit. He'll wait for that, you know. And my brother lives in Perth and has come over so many times to say goodbye.
Sometimes they do it despite, like, people. Hang on, just get them back.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get, he's just teaching us all a lesson.
That's nice, Trish.
but he's still going.
Good on him. 29 years. Guys. That's a good story. Okay, now, guys, we play this off-air, but I think it's such a fun game to play. We should do it so that other people can get involved. I get the women's magazines delivered on a Monday, and I just kind of scout through them.
By Thursday, you've normally finished them.
Mind you, you take them home, so don't you be talking.
They're not for me.
Yeah, anyway.
Crosswords.
I want to throw some stories that have come through, and I have to say that this week, New Idea is beating Women's Day hands down with controversial stories. I want to throw a couple of stories at you, and I want you guys to give me your take on whether you actually think it's true or not.
Well, like
is this a game?
It's a game.
It's a game of women's mags. Is it true or is it BS?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, we know that Karl Stefanovic was off last week. We also know that he went over to LA to see his girlfriend.
Shoe designer.
What?
She's a shoe designer.
Okay, yes, she
is. Oh, is that not the question?
See, You say you don't read them, Marto. Anyway, her name is Yasmin, and apparently she flung herself into his arms when he got off the plane. She wrapped her arms and legs around him passionately, and he said, will you spend the rest of your life with me? True or false?
Definitely not. There's no. How long was the flight that Carl had been on?
Oh, what's LA to Sydney to LA? 14 hours?
All right. Was it three drinks?
Ooh, he was travelling first class, so yes. Mm.
So would you imagine that Mr. Stefanovic would be coherent enough to say that when he
was he
off
with
the
Richard
plane?
Wilkins?
No, but apparently Dickie was over there at some point. They did meet up.
Is there any photos of the arms and legs wrapped around him?
Yes, there are. Definitely photos. And there's a photo.
Well, she was airborne momentarily.
She was.
Jesus.
And also there's a photo of when they're putting the bags in the car that he has her hand on her butt.
Oh, wow, it's a butt hand.
Towie.
Okay, he's towie. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Second story.
That's what those Connor stewardesses can do to you.
Woo.
Brad Pitt, let's move on to Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, and their daughter Shiloh.
Well,
now,
this is
apparently,
their area of expertise.
Jennifer Aniston has rocked up to Brad's house for a 30-minute chat with him and his kids. And Shiloh has made the announcement that, Daddy, could she be our next mum?
Oh, no.
Who is quoting Shiloh, the kid who sits next door to Shiloh at school?
A close family friend.
What are you saying? Preschool sources say.
How old is Shiloh now?
10.
Oh, 10 years old.
Which
and
country is Shiloh from? Is she from the Asian continent or Africa or what area of the world?
She's actually a biological child.
Well, did they actually have one real child?
Yeah, they have a couple. They have twins, Vivian and
Can
Knox.
Can you be my next mummy?
Yeah, okay. True,
fan
false,
of friends, isn't
no.
She?
Nah. Yeah, that is a zero. That is zero out of 10 true. Right. They're now making up fake quotes for 10-year-olds. Jesus.
Okay, two more quickly. Delta Goodrum and Seal are a couple.
No.
They do this every year. The women's magazines, Marto, we've said this before you got here, Robin. There's a whole department, and what it is, right, it's the fake boyfriend department, and they alternate. 1 week, poor old Samantha Armitage has got to beg for a boyfriend.
Wasn't
and then the
Delta
next
going
week,
out with
Delta.
Hugh Sheridan at one stage?
Apparently.
And then
well, I don't know about that.
Yeah, but we've actually got quotes from Seal on this one. It's been a dream. I love Delta. I think she's a national treasure. I respect a lot of what she has to say, but then again, I'm biased. I know that Delta has got my back, quote unquote.
There's bigger chance of Seal going out with the cat in the hat. What's his name? Boy George.
Cat in the hat.
Oh, have you seen it?
That'll do, mate.
Have you seen the ad?
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And do you want one more?
No, okay, it's a great game.
Okay, Russell Crowe is renovating his Nana Glen property in Coffs Harbour so that...
He's getting back on with, what's her name?
No, Terry Irwin. Can move in.
No.
Not true.
Unless they're putting in cages for crocs. And they're and she
it looks like there's a 12 metre high shed. The giraffes will go there. This is looking likely.
I want that one to be true.
No, I'm going to go. You're 0 for 5 today, Robin. They're all completely false.
Okay, I'll try better next week.
No, that was good enough.
All BS today. I'll try and find some truth next week. Marto, Ed and Robin on the new Triple M.
Okay, guys, as you know, term two for me is a lot of driving because my kids are fanatical football players and we just have 20 or so sessions a week. So last night, as I was going from the Logan Motorway onto the Cunningham Highway to pick up one of my sons at about 8 o'clock last night, I was looking at the road and I was thinking, how the heck are those texting bays going to work on our national roads?
Did you see the proposal for over in Western Australia? They were going to build these enormous, not just a little pull-off emergency bay style, huge things like the long-distance drives where you go and have a sleep or go to the toilet.
Rest enormous stops. So here's the thing. We've got those rest stops. So if you want to pull in there and text, go right ahead. But as if... people. Like, I literally was just driving and I'm thinking, okay, if my phone beeped right now, would I be looking for a bay to go and answer a text. No, I wouldn't.
What do you do?
Well, to be honest, in the past, I have been known at traffic lights to text, and because because I find that not a good thing, particularly as I'm teaching one of my children to drive, I have to lead by example. So either now I put my phone on silent, so I have no idea, and I face it down, or it's in my handbag, and I don't know if anyone's trying to contact me, or I put it in the boot in my handbag. So even tempted, I don't do it because I recognise that if my kids see me doing that all the time at traffic lights, then they're going
to
do it.
I don't know if I've had this chat to you, but Ed and I've spoken before. Mark Scaife, a bit of a mate of mine now. The racing driver, but he's an expert on road safety too. He's one of Australia's experts. He considers that texting in the car is as bad as drink driving. All right, so therefore, why not? I love your idea of putting it in the boot. I do not text while I'm driving. I do not even pick up the phone while I'm driving.
But you see it, though, don't you? We all see it.
Every single day. I saw it twice on the way home yesterday, Arvo. One was on my right at one set of traffic lights, the next one on the left. And I know they think they're stopped, but I tell you what, it's a pain in the ass when you're ready and alert and ready to go at a green light and someone's still finishing off a bit of a text.
Oh, yeah. That happens constantly. Sometimes you'll be going the other way. You know, you're facing you and some lights are facing
each
other.
And you can see them.
Yeah, sometimes you'll see someone at the front of the other lights texting, and they're just, apart from anything else, it holds up. All right, traffic. It holds up the
I'll give you another one. Start really punishing them. And that's the only way they stop, whether it's smoking or whatever they want you to stop, they punish you more and more. I got a mate of mine, went DD for the first time in his life, and he went 0.15 and got one of those interlockers.
Oh, yeah.
What, after the first go?
First time he'd ever had been any trouble whatsoever, went 1.5, right on the bottom end, but got an interlocker. That thing ruined his life. It was such a bastard of a life. Like, he got his suspension, and then when he went getting his license back, he had to go on this thing for a year. What a pain in the ass that is. And he was half deaf. He kept missing the thing. Then he'd have to go and get reloaded. I'm saying that if you ever get picked up once texting, you've got to have an interlocker device, that your phone must be in the boot before you can start your car. It's got to get to that,
so
because
do you
they're
agree,
killing people.
Do you agree then that those bays would be slightly pointless?
Yeah, bloody oath.
Okay, I just thought, okay, if they've worked in Western Australia and they're now thinking about bringing them out federally, then there must have been some success
people
with
won't
them.
Stop. So you've got to stop them from themselves. Like, it's an honour, a privilege to drive on our roads. And so make it that. If people don't want to, go and catch a bus. You can text your ass off.
Yeah, but I wonder whether that's going to change human nature. I think it's one of those instinctive things. Whereas drink driving, there's more, you've got to actually work at it. To get in a car and be drunk, like you've had to have spent a fair while drinking.
Well, break the habit of texting.
How do you
We never texted before.
We didn't have phones to text before.
That's right. Well, therefore, we must stop and create a new habit of you put your phone, if you want to take a phone with. Oh, then they'll just get another bloody phone, won't they?
That's very true. People be working two phones.
I don't know that there's an easy solution. I really don't. I think because human nature dictates that if they hear something, we are instinctive to go and react in a moment to whatever it is.
Oh, I watch my kids learn to drive. Same thing. Ooh, the ping of their phone. It sends a volt of electricity through their body.
Someone's liked a picture.
Quick!
A comment. Cool, bro. Yes. Yes. Talking today about the 457 visa changes, the visas for skilled workers to come in from overseas. A number of occupations have been slashed from that list. We've been hearing your stories today about whether or not in your industry it's a good or bad idea. But to give us a bit more of an overview, it's the man that makes complex economic matters able to be understood by people like me. It is Ross Greenwood, Channel 9's Money Man. G'day, Ross. Now, I've seen you describe 457 visas as being able to be rorted in the past. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, by rorted, what I mean is that people were able to obtain 457 visas that should not have been able to. Okay. The categories of people who could come into this country was way too broad. So, for example, does Australia really need so many chefs in this country to come from overseas? I'm not 100% sure. Is it a situation where Australia really needed to have a range of basic professions coming into this country, from all sorts of areas? What I'm saying is you found situations where people quite clearly did not properly advertise or test as to whether they could find that particular person in Australia because they went overseas and found the person. And not necessarily that they could work more cheaply, but it would be certain that if you sponsored a person in here and their employment relied on you, that they would have to buckle to your work terms and conditions. And I think that was fundamentally wrong. So let's say, for example, if you go to the top nominated visas in Australia as of September last year, the last time they did this.
Yeah.
6,400 cooks, 4,900 cafe or restaurant managers, 2,890 chefs. I mean, please, you know, give me a break. There were 1,640 motor mechanics in the country. Do you think we couldn't find enough motor mechanics in this country that we had to import them?
Yes.
Well, yeah, we had a call from a guy earlier going, it's a terrible thing and no kids want to be diesel fitters or mechanics anymore.
Yeah, well, the truth is, and there is a fundamental problem. But, you know, 457 visas were not massive in the whole scheme of things. I'll give you a couple of small examples. There are right now just over 12 million people employed in Australia. 12 million.
Yeah.
Now, of those 12 million, there are 95,000 people who are on 457 visas. So that's 0.79% of the total workforce. It's not very many. Now, even though I think that the tests will lax and, you know, say, for example, there are no criminal checks on these people, you know, tests to see whether they spoke English or were
really?
Properly employed.
Okay.
You know, types of things. That had to be clamped down upon, there's no doubt. That's the reason why the system had to change.
So but it'll make a material... It'll make a material difference, or is it just posturing so Turnbull looks politically strong?
I think it is designed to make the government look politically strong, though these recommendations have been around for some time, and the fact that the government has done something about it, I think, is pretty smart. But what the government also has to clamp down upon, and there's another area of visa rorting that quite clearly has caused even bigger problems, and that's student visas and backpacker visas, where those people come into the country and are genuinely exploited by manipulative employers. And ultimately, you see truck drivers ripping along our freeways that shouldn't actually be in a car, let alone a truck. And you've got people on farms working for basically $4 an hour who, again, shouldn't be here. But then you've got to make certain that Australians have got more incentive to go out and take these jobs and to fill these positions as distinct from copping the welfare and saying it's too hard to go to work because, frankly, I'm better off if I'm sitting at home on the couch.
So, Ross, for all those, because all these people that are calling us are saying that it will impact their industry. So for anyone who is on a 457 visa now, will they get deported? What will happen to them?
No. They stay. So they stay until the end of the... So here's another rort with the whole system. If you're on a 457 visa and you basically were able to stay here for 4 years, right? Now, the rules in Australia are, if you stay in Australia for 4 years, you can then qualify for permanent residency here in Australia. Yeah. If you stay for five, you can get a passport. Now, the thing is, they could roll over those visas to another 4 years, get a passport and become Australian citizens. That wasn't what the system was designed to do.
No. Have they
it was
stopped
designed
that?
To actually fill skill gaps. Have so they've got to stop that as well.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking that. It does feel a little bit like an immigration decision partly disguised as a workplace decision, but that's, you know, what Malcolm Turnbull's decided to do. Ross Greenwood, Channel 9's Money Man, always a pleasure to have you on it. I've got to give you my one-word answer question. Will eBay and the other online retailers abandon Australia if they have to pay GST?
No.
Didn't think so. Thank you, Ross. Thanks, always a pleasure.
See you, Ross.
Bye.
Okay, so the Australian government have released a new analysis from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. So basically they've looked at how and where and why people are getting injured and put them in statistics. Now, let me start with the awful ones because they go from awful to actually really quite surprising and one very relevant for you, Mardo.
Thank you.
So let's start with the awful. Domestic violence is the leading cause of hospitalised assault amongst girl and women. So 6,500 women and girls are hospitalised due to assault in Australia. God, isn't that terrible. Awful?
Bigger that's than any terrible. Illness or yep. disease or anything like that?
Yep. That's it. Domestic violence is what is injuring our girls and women in this country.
Is that a going up figure or going down? You hope that's going down.
Well,
but
they
you also
are...
don't know because, you know, they remember people don't talk. We speak to the people from DV Connectors. They say that it's more reporting and then more people actually seeking treatment, Robin.
And they are saying that the first comprehensive statistical picture on the topic will be released later in 2017. So these are figures from 2013 to 14. So I actually think it's going to get worse.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Okay, so that's the awful one. And I think we should all just kind of remember that as we move through our day and maybe think about it when we're dealing with the domestic violence. But here are some of the interesting ones. There are 800 cases of seriously unintentional injury involving a train.
What?
Exactly right.
How many? 800?
800 cases.
What, go to hospital?
Yeah.
Is that getting your leg caught in things?
Unintentional. So this isn't someone, you know, trying to drive through. But, you know, actually slipping between the platform and the train, that happens with popular. Small kids. Mm. And they may get kind of cut on the way down. Mind the gap. Okay. Nearly 4,000 people were hospitalised due to a dog-related injury.
Mm. I'm not surprised by that.
Well,
that
of course you're not.
That I am not surprised by. They are.
Dogs have been singled out.
Yeah. With the highest number of dog bite hospitalisations occurring amongst children under the age of 9. That's also not surprising.
Similar size to the dog. Dogs love jumping up on kids because they feel they're almost the same size. Yeah. God.
Okay, and this one, Marto, is specifically for you.
What's that?
About 4 in 5 do-it-yourself injuries that occur as a result of... Hedge a bet before I tell you.
Oh, what's the injury?
Yep. What is it that's making people go to hospital from doing it yourself?
Grind into the groin. Is it that specific?
No, it's power not tools? That. No.
Nail guns.
Nutribullets.
No. Nutribullet injury.
Ab
no.
Sculptors.
I'm going to give you a clue. Molly Meldrum.
Oh, falling off ladders.
Yes.
Ladders. While drunk on vodka.
Big
well,
hats.
Okay.
Yeah, so many tradesmen out there. Every
yeah, result of
going,
falls. Oh, and then it's tools, and then it's machinery.
As
and
well.
Not surprisingly, occurring in males, most frequently aged 55 to 74.
Oh, yeah, get off a ladder, old blokes. Get off. Get off your ladders. Thank you. Thank you, Robin, for that public safety
there you go.
Message.